This is Chuck Anderson. We're at the Gladys Pyle House Museum, located in the eastern part of Huron, South Dakota, and we have two guests with us today who are true experts on the life of Gladys Pyle. We have Nancy Holslaw, director of the Gladys Pyle House Museum, and Ruby Johansson, director of the Dakota Land Museum. Ladies, it's just great to have you with you on the show and with us, and welcome.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
First, let's explain to our listeners who Gladys Pyle was. Nancy?
Gladys was the first South Dakota woman elected to either House of Congress and the first woman of either party to be elected to the United States Senate without first having been appointed to fill an unexpired term, and that was in 1938.
Wow, and that is, every time I think of it, the first of anything is really important, but to be the first woman in either the House of Representatives or the United States Senate, that's really something. And Ruby, the reason that we have you here is that you're with the Dakota Land Museum, and please tell us how you're involved with the Gladys Pyle home.
The Dakota Land Museum owns the Gladys Pyle House Museum also, and they're governed by the same board of directors.
So you're actually the big person involved in this, and we're very happy to have you with us, Ruby. Nancy, could you explain to us the Pyle House Museum?
The Pyle House in Huron is an excellent and well-preserved example of the Queen Anne-style architecture, a style developed by Sir Christopher Wren after the Great Fire in London in 1666 and revived during the late 19th century. Features include ridge cresting on the roof line, many gables, and decorative bead designs in sunburst and starburst patterns on the porch, leaded and stained glass window headers. Inside, the carved golden oak woodwork and parquet hall floor are noteworthy.
Can we just interrupt right here now? Because I'll tell you what, I've got the beautiful prismatic rainbow effects. Look at on my shirt here,
yes.
I've got reds and oranges, and it's just beautiful. And it's coming through the beautiful beveled glass in that foyer, right?
Yes, it is very beautiful, and at certain times of the day, it does come through there and shines all over the room.
And today, I think, is the third or fourth day of the whole month that we've had sunshine, so
yes.
It's really quite beautiful.
Well,
I didn't mean to interrupt you. Please tell us more about the home here.
The original lighting fixtures, now electrified, remain and include an unusual hall chandelier whose frosted glass shade depict two English queens. The house has been on the National Register of Historical Places since 1974. Many of the furnishings in the house are those purchased when the home was completed in 1893 and finished in 1894. They have the patina of many years of use. The house also contains carefully preserved memorabilia of the Pyle family members who have lived here over the past century. John Levi Pyle, who built the house, and his wife Mamie Shields Pyle, and their four children, John, May, Nellie, and Gladys. The Pyles have been a part of the Huron since his infancy and have many lasting contributions to the city, the state, and the nation.
Wow. Now, let's just zero in on Gladys Pyle, of the various Pyles. But Ruby, this is really fascinating. First of all, the father was really important, and he brought to Huron one of the most, probably one of the more important institutions here.
John Pyle was very instrumental in bringing the Huron College to Huron. It
was
the father. This is Gladys's father. And he was the one that got the university originally was in Pierre. And he brought it to Huron. It was Huron College, now Huron University. And it started in what is now the Inn, then moved over to where it is at now. So
I didn't. You had mentioned before the show that the original housing for Huron College was where the Inn Hotel is at right now, and I never knew that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where they had the rooms were their classrooms, and I don't know what year it moved over to where it is now, but there was a pile on the board, at the college clear up till Gladys finally went off. John was on, and then Mamie was on, and then Gladys.
Always a pile.
Always a pile. John also was an attorney, the Attorney General of the state of South Dakota from 1899 until 1902, and he was also a Judge Advocate General of the South Dakota National Guard. He died at a very young age. He was only 43 when he died, but he did many things in those short years.
Yeah.
Was very instrumental with Gladys, especially. She thought a lot of her father, probably more so because he died so young. She was only 13 when her father died.
How about the mother?
Mamie Shields Pyle was very active in the women's suffrage movement, and she was president of the South Dakota Universal Franchise League when women of this state finally won the right to vote in 1819. She was a presidential elector, one of only seven women in the Electoral College in 1920, the first in which women could serve. She was president of the Huron College Women's Association and a member of the College Board of Trustees from 1902 to 1949. She was active in the Huron YWCA, Red Cross, WCTU, and other civic organizations.
And coming from stock like that, I guess we can see where Gladys eventually kind of set the tone for women. She never really probably realized how important she was to a woman's movement, which would be about 60, 70 years down the line.
Right. Her mother really didn't want Gladys to get into politics, which was one of her main things, because she thought Gladys would ride on her coattails instead of turning around to be the other way around.
I often, when I hear the name Gladys Pyle, this name comes to mind, Susan B. Anthony, and why am I correlating the two names together?
Well, Susan B. Anthony was one of the ones very instrumental in the women's suffrage, and which Mamie Shields Pyle was very active in. So, and of course, Gladys being the daughter, she was right in on it.
And she really was in on it. Nancy, let's hear some of the achievements. And when I say some, because we'll never be able to cover them all, some of the achievements of a very famous lady originating from Huron.
Well, Gladys was born in 1890, and she was a lifelong resident of the Pyle House. She was the first woman elected to the South Dakota House of Representatives in 1922. She was the first woman to serve as assistant in a state constitutional office, that of Secretary of State or Assistant Secretary of State, and then she became Secretary of State from 27 through 31. She was the Secretary of the Securities Commission of South Dakota from 31 through 33. She was the first United States woman senator from South Dakota in 1938, the first South Dakota woman, as I said before, elected to either House of Congress, and the first woman of either party to be elected to the United States Senate without first having been appointed to fill an expired term. She was a delegate to the National Republican Convention in 1940 in Philadelphia, where she became the first woman to place a name and nomination for the presidency. She was the first assistant foreman of the first jury in South Dakota on which women were permitted to serve in 1947. She was Huron's First Lady of the Year in 1952. She was the recipient of the honorary of Dr. Law's degree from Huron College in 1958. And the first woman to receive the Huron Chamber of Commerce Distinguished Civic Service Award in 1965. So she was quite a lady.
She was. And what year did you say she was born?
She was born in 1890.
You know, Nancy, I'm trying to remember back. I believe she published a book in 1985. Is that right, Ruby?
Yes.
Uh-huh. I was there, 1985. How old would she have been in 1985? Wow, because she was really sharp. I interviewed her for several out-of-town radio stations. She was signing books and interviewing, and she was doing all of this at the same time, autographing the books. And in 1985, then she would have been about 95 years old. Is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And she was sharp. Were you at the book signing party at the public library? Well, I'll tell you, she just handled it just like a master. These people wanting her to sign. She also did a little lecture before the book party. It was just wonderful. 95 years old. I didn't realize it at the time. And I hope somewhere in my archives I've kept that interview with Gladys Pyle.
Gladys never needed notes to talk. All she needed to do was have an audience, and she could talk.
Do you think Gladys realized what she was doing for women all over the nation? Do you think this was going through her mind?
I don't know whether she did or not.
Nancy?
I really couldn't tell you. There are a lot of interesting stories about her over the years, and she was quite humble in her feelings and stuff, and I just don't think she considered the overall picture of it.
And she never married?
No, she never married, and she lived till she was 98 years old.
98
yes.
years old.
Wow, 98. And I know when I saw her at 95, she was just as sharp as a tack.
Right, right.
And all of her life then was evolved around this home that we're sitting at right now. As we came in the door, I don't know what you call the small dowels of wood that have the beads on them. What's that called?
That's called carpenter's lace, and it's in a sunburst and a starburst pattern, the sunburst being the more rounded of the pattern, and the same pattern you'll see on the outside of the house.
That's
in
right.
Different areas,
so
on the porch and on up higher on the house.
As I walked in the front door, and I might say it's the first time I've been in the Pyle House Museum, and I just really want to tell people that I think it's good, and I recommend it. And my production director happens to be Ruby this afternoon, and she's tough. She's showing me that it's time for us to take a little break, so we're going to be right back in one moment. You're listening to Personalities with Chuck Anderson. This is Chuck Anderson. We're visiting with Nancy Holtzclaw, who is the director of the Pyle House Museum, and Ruby Johansson. Johansson, am I saying it right, Ruby?
It's okay.
And Ruby is the director of the Dakota Land Museum, and you people have done a wonderful job in preserving this house. Was it in this good of a shape, Ruby, when you picked it up?
It was in very good shape. All we did was clean it up. We did paint the kitchen walls and do a little work in the kitchen, but the house was in very good shape. It had always been lived in. It was a new house for the Piles, and so it was always taken well care of. So it was not run down like a lot of older homes are.
Now, Ruby, what do you mean it was a new house? I didn't want to get lost there.
Well, it was built by John Pyle in 1894
for
his family. So it was a new house then. And when you start out with a new house, you take good care of it.
Like a one-owner car.
Right.
Now, she was 95 years old, then went to a rest home, is that right?
Yes, she went to a rest home about a year and a half before she died.
And did she run this house by herself and keep it as neat as it is?
Well, as she got older, it was more of a problem for her. She had a housekeeper that came in and helped because, you know, when you get up in your 90s, you can't do the things you did when you were younger.
That's right.
But basically, it was not abused because when it was new was when the children were small. Well, then there wasn't any small children in here except a niece, and that was many years ago when she was young, probably in the early 20s.
And so Nancy says now you're going to do a little renovating on the outside?
As right now, we're working on a project to raise funds to paint the outside of the house, which is going to be quite a project considering the way the house is
mm-hmm.
built. And it is peeling quite badly out there, and we're coming upon our centennial year this next year, and we'd like to raise funds to get that painted out there.
Well, it looks beautiful to me right now. I think you guys have done a wonderful job. Let's kind of review for our listeners the house of a very famous lady, first in so many things, not only in South Dakota, but in the United States. I walked in the front door, and I came into a hall, and that's beautiful open staircase. And where does that go up to? That would have been their bedrooms upstairs?
Oh, there are five bedrooms upstairs, and It's all golden oak. The woodwork in here is golden oak, and it's a beautiful staircase, hand-carved and everything.
And if you turn to the left in the ante hall as you come in, what room do we enter?
We go into the parlor.
And are those pretty well authentic pieces of furniture that's in there?
Oh, everything's authentic in here. Everything was Gladys's, or the family's furniture.
All of this was Gladys's, really?
This is all the family furniture in here, yes.
I thought maybe you had brought in some items.
No, this is all her stuff in here.
So the table, this oak table that we're having our interview at right now, would have been an original table?
With five leaves that go in it, too. Oh. Yes, it was. And she had sold it when she had renters upstairs quite a few years to help with the upkeep of the house. And she sold this table. And when it was to become an historical home, the gentleman volunteered to give it back to her.
Oh, that's great.
And he did in 1974 when it became an historical home.
So this table, can you imagine the people that she must have entertained when she was a United States Senator and all of the things right here at this table? Okay, so we went into, what was that first room that we went into?
Parlor.
And then the next room is?
The sitting room.
And why do they need a parlor and why do they need a sitting room?
Well, the parlor was when you had company. You didn't use the parlor every day.
Okay.
You kept that closed off. There are three sets of pocket doors that close off.
Explain that. That's these big doors that slide, right?
The two sliding doors that close together and close off the rooms. They're called pocket doors, and they do a very good job. We use them when we give tours, when we have two groups of people and two tour guides, and it works very well for us.
So the parlor is just for company when they'd come over,
mm-hmm.
And the sitting room is where we go?
That's where the family use that in the evenings, but you don't go in the parlor all the time.
Why did they have such big, beautiful dining rooms? Was it because of just big families, or was it sort of the rich thing to do?
Well, I think everyone had dining rooms at that time. That was as much. Everybody didn't go out to eat like they do now.
That's right.
You had your meals at home, and they had large families and a lot of company. And now, which we don't do as much now, Grandma and Grandpa, when they got to where they couldn't take care of themselves, they moved in. So you extended your family another one or two.
This, Ruby, that you hit on something that is just fantastic. In Asia, this is still done. You don't throw Mom and Dad out to some rest home, nor do you do the same thing to your Grandma and Grandpa, because the Orientals figure they're the wisest of all people, right?
Right. And
so why are we throwing our wisest people away from the family unit?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's that, because we aren't in the home now to take care of the people.
Okay.
Most everyone is working out of the home, so they need care that you can't give them in your home.
Okay, that was very wise. Now, how did we get into this large dining room? We made a left from the front door so I don't get lost. We went through the parlor. We made a right then and came into the sitting room. Then we made another right so I don't get lost, and now we're in the dining room.
Mm-hmm.
And now beyond the dining room, of course, is probably the most important room for the house.
The kitchen. Where everything happened in the kitchen.
That's right. And I recognize that little room that has been probably a little modernized, but I recognized it to be a what?
That's the pantry.
And what were pantries for?
That's where you stored everything. And they were a very unique and very practical part of a house, because you could store all your staples in there, plus your dishes. And I wouldn't mind having one in my own house. And that was a forerunner of the cupboards on the wall like we have now.
Nancy, you have a most beautiful reddish, pinkish, flowering plant over there by this. Would that be a bay? That's bigger than a bay window, though, isn't it? It's just enormous. It goes out. And what is this beautiful flowering plant?
That's a cactus plant. And that is Gloria's. Gloria is our caretaker and lives on the premises all the time. And she keeps the yard looking so beautiful all the time outside.
And that's a Christmas cactus, and how does it know? to bloom before Christmas?
I really couldn't tell you.
I think that this home is, because I've always loved antiques, and as I look at it, now it means a great deal more that I realize this is Gladys's stuff. This is all her stuff or her parents'.
We added two things. In the kitchen, we put in an old cook stove so that it would look like the old kitchen were, especially for the children. And we also have a crank-style telephone, like they had back then, which, of course, she wouldn't have had now. So,
what are some of the more interesting items in this house, Nancy, that you're proud to talk about?
Well, in the dining room here, we have the first linoleum put down in Huron. It was brought back from Chicago by John Pyle's law partner. And John Pyle put it down himself with the LePage's glue you see over there.
Oh, really?
And then and then upstairs we have the first bathtub in Huron.
First bathtub in Huron?
Yes, and people would come to visit just to see the bathtub, to look at the bathtub.
And I suppose they had a lot of visitors to come and use the first bathtub, huh?
Probably.
So both ways, this bathtub is getting a lot of use.
Yes, it's still up there.
Tell us about some other items that you, Nancy, as director of the home here. I wanted to call it the home. I guess it's called house, but to me, it's her home, so I think of it that way. Tell us some more of the interesting items that you think Gladys would have been proud to have mentioned to us today.
Well, as you come in the front, in the entryway, there's a light there that was a kerosene lantern to begin with. It's frosted, and it was hung by a hook, and it was a kerosene lantern. And they'd pull it down and fill it and clean it each day and put it back up. And, of course, it was electrified later on, or when electricity came to town. And
the light fixtures, Ruby, what'd you say now?
The light fixtures are the original ones that were put in when Huron first got the electricity.
Wow.
They were never changed. They're still the same ones.
Still the original ones, and you're still using them today, Nancy?
Yes. And they're all pulled on via chains rather than switches. And this is mostly because there's a foot and a half of cement around the base of the house where you can't bring your wiring up into the walls and put your switches on the walls, so you have the chains to pull on.
Wow. How about the uniforms?
John Pyle was the first adjutant general of the 1st National Guard, and his uniform is in the sitting room, and his the brass buttons on the uniform have the seal of South Dakota on them. And the hat is made out of beaver, and that's quite interesting. And we have a picture, or we have his sword on the wall, and a picture of John Pyle on his horse with the sword in his hat.
Well, he was out in this country when it was still a territory, Dakota territory.
Yes.
Do you have, either one of you ladies can jump in on this, do you have anything around here from Dakota territory? They're both shaking their heads. I don't know.
Yes, but can't think of anything more.
Maybe they're still locked away in some of these trunks and vaults and stuff.
Could be. There are many, many books in this house. There's like over 400 books. Gladys was a great reader. She was reading all the time and also used her dictionary all the time. Very, very educated person.
So you got any hand notes like written in on the margins or anything? Have you noticed?
Oh, yes. There's things around here in her handwriting.
We're going to be back in one moment. I really want to thank you ladies for the first two segments on the show. It's just been fascinating, at least to me anyway. It has been, I hope, to the viewers. And it's just something wonderful. It's a person that we don't want to forget about here in Huron, Gladys Pyle, and we would rightfully say Senator Gladys Pyle. This is Chuck Anderson. We'll be back in one moment. We're back. This is Chuck Anderson visiting with some very knowledgeable ladies about the Gladys Pyle House and the museum. We have to our left, of course you don't know it's the left, but we have Nancy Holslaw. She's the director of the Pyle House Museum. And Ruby Johansson, who is the director of the Dakota Land Museum. And they have been very, very valuable in helping me understand what I'm seeing in the museum today. I did see a mannequin, Ruby, as I came in the front door. And please tell me the significance of the mannequin.
The mannequin has a dress on that belonged to Gladys with a fur stole or shawl and a fur hat. These were clothes that a lot of people saw Gladys wearing. And there's a picture of Gladys in this same outfit.
Oh, that's this picture here on the wall.
Mm-hmm. And with a number of political people.
Let's talk about this. Who's standing behind Gladys in that coat and shawl?
We have former governors, Sigrid Anderson, Frank Farrar, Archie Goobrid, Senator Larry Pressler, and Congressman Jim Abner, and also Governor William Jankel, and of course Gladys. So.
Quite a memento, huh? Wow. The oil painting, I know that name, Joni Cheddar. Can you mention the painting, Nancy? It's a perfect lightness. Or a ruby?
This isn't just an oil painting that was done by Joni. Very nice painting that was done. The family had this painted for her not too long before she died or went to the nursing home, because it's of her as she was older. We also have a graphite drawing of her in the parlor that was done by Sharon Corbin from over by Bancroft.
Yes.
And that's a very nice drawing, and it was at the Huron College, and they gave it to the house after it became a museum.
Is this beautiful fireplace that we're looking at in the parlor, is that the one where you get cold on one side and warm on the other, Nancy?
Right. Gladys had stories about how they'd sit around the fire, the family, and you would definitely get cold on warm on three sides and cold on the other. And it's quite a beautiful Victorian fireplace. It has shadow boxes on each side, and
it's all made out of that beautiful oak.
Yes, beautiful, and a plate glass mirror with beveled edges and.
And just magnificent. It looks like it's never been used, but you said they used it a lot.
Yes, they did. They definitely did.
There's a doll in a glass encase in the parlor. What's the significance, Nancy, about the doll?
That was won by Gladys's sister when she was 14 years old.
And what year would that have been, do you think?
In 1904. And it was won at the South Dakota State Fair for making the best doll outfit. And you'll see that outfit is laying on the bed in the sitting room. And it's the doll is a beautiful German bisque doll.
Yes. China bisque.
Ooh. Yes.
Now, right next to it is there's a wreath of some sort. What would that wreath be made out of?
That's a hair wreath made out of the hair of John Pyle's family, one of the sisters. I believe it's tatting, tatted the hair of the family. And John Pyle had red hair, and it kind of looks like it has a little red cast to it.
Was this something they did in those days?
Yes, that's something, and I imagine it took quite a bit of time. I don't know how they did it, and I'm sure it was time-consuming, but it's quite a wreath.
Well, Grandfather was quite distinguished himself. We're reading the discharge papers that he got, right after the Civil War?
Yes, from the Civil War, and it does have 1866 on it. And we have that on the wall in the sitting room.
Boy, quite a distinguished family, Ruby. The kitchen, I noticed the high chair. Now, I'll bet that's going to belong to the star of the museum. Was that Gladys's?
Yes, that was Gladys's baby high chair. And there's also a mug that has her name on it that she used when she was small. In the parlor is also a small rocking chair that was Gladys's.
Well, you guys have, this really is very, very authentic. I mean, it's just everything is the way it was.
Yes. We haven't changed anything that we could possibly leave as it is.
Now, I had to be snoopy, and some of the doors were closed there in the kitchen, and I opened this one door, and there's some stairs that goes up, and that's fascinating. And do you remember what they used to call those?
That went up to the maid's room, they called
it. They called the maid's loft. Yeah.
Right. And the bedroom at the top was for the maid, Then there's a bathroom, and then there are four bedrooms besides upstairs.
Well, we forget, you know, families of distinction, he being an attorney, the mother being very successful in her own right, they had servants.
Right. They mostly called him the hired girl here. They didn't want to be too fancy. But it would be a maid or a hired girl.
There's many homes, if you have the chance to get in here and all through South Dakota, if it's a fairly large home and it was built before 1900, especially in the 1800s, you will find always a wing that would have housed the servants. They wanted to keep the servants right there, and it's a very smart thing to do because you had 24-hour service.
Right.
Probably a dollar a week.
Probably, and then, of course, their food and keep, and that's probably all they got out of it.
I'm curious to hear the story about the girl who burned in the home, Nancy.
Well, back, and this was back before John Pyle died, they did have this girl in the home. She was 19 years old, and she was washing kid gloves out with gasoline and tried to light a kerosene lantern. And she was here by herself. She tried to get out the back way. It was locked because of tramps back then.
Really?
Yeah. And she burned up in this area of the house, dining room, kitchen area of the house. It's a wonder the whole house didn't burn down. It was rather sad. Yes, rather sad story. Yes, she came from Wisconsin, and they took her back to Wisconsin. And, of course, this was when the kids were very young.
The house was only 3 years old at this time. So, and then it was all repaired again. And the writing on the wall, right up, it's on the wall, it mentioned where Mr. and Mrs. Pyle went back with the body to take it back to her parents.
We are quite close to the original Chicago Northwestern Railroad yards here. Mm-hmm. And Huron, this was probably, you know, one of the first homes in this part of Huron. We're on 4th in Idaho, so we're actually only about three blocks from the railroad yards. And I hadn't really thought about hobos, and people did have a fear that they would run into them, and the door being locked caused the girl's death.
Yes. Wow. Yeah, well, she couldn't get out.
Well, if she would have gotten out, she still would have had her hands would have been on fire.
Right.
It probably would have been quicker even, you know, because as soon as air hits fire, it gets worse.
That's true. There's a oil painting hanging in the sitting room. And there is quite a story about the shanty. Nancy, could you give our listeners that story?
This is a claim shanty. Gladys taught the early part of her professional life was teaching. And then after that, she went out to help her brother prove up his claim on the land by living in a claim shanty for around a year.
Where was that at?
And this was 25 miles north of Belle Fourche in western South Dakota. And
it's really rustic. I mean, it's more than rustic. It's
primitive.
Yes, that's the word.
And this was mostly the sister-in-law had tuberculosis at the time, and she helped out with her, and there was a very young Florence Pyle, the niece, who is now in her 70s. She helped out with her.
Yes.
And the brother, of course, he was a lawyer also, and he was coming and going, so Gladys she stayed there all the time.
A year in that little tiny thing, it looks like it's about 12 by 14 feet, with a family.
Probably, yes. A little crowded.
Ruby, this home, I'm just starting to get the feel of Gladys Pyle. You can feel the Pyle influence. The family was really an important family for the Dakotas. They were well-bred, educated.
John Pyle more or less educated himself using the Chautauqua books. In fact, some of the books are here that he used. And that was how he became an attorney, was through studying with those books.
So. The Chautauqua, I guess you really could learn a great deal. You remember this summer, Ruby? Did you have a chance to get down and watch the Chautauqua here?
One.
They were fantastic. And I remember the words of one man when he said, if we have done nothing else but to make you think, we have done what we've come here to do. And some of the statements that they made was wild for their era.
Yes.
And they made us all think, I'm sure.
Right, they sure did. They were very well done.
So Mr. Pyle then picked up a great deal of his education through this respect.
Right. Education in the mail, or you would write for the books, and then you would get the books, and then you would study them, and then do the exams and send them in, and they'd be graded.
Yeah. I can have a great deal of respect. In other words, he was a self-made man.
Right.
And then for his children, what did he do to have them educated? He having to be self-taught, what did he do with his kids?
Well, then, of course, for one thing, they had to read constantly. He was always reading. If they came inside and he was reading, which he would read to Mrs. Pyle while she was cooking, and if they came in and he was reading, they had to stop and just wait until he was done reading before they could say anything.
Fascinating. Fascinating. I never realized that they read that much.
Right. And he was instrumental in bringing Huron College to Huron for his children so they could get the education. We have a picture in the sitting room of the three Pyle sisters, and they almost look, they're 14 months apart in age. And the picture is the Huron 1909 college debate team made up of the three Pyle sisters. And they worked it out, so they all graduated the same year in 1911. Huh. And Gladys skipped a grade, and the first sister waited a year, and then they graduated in 1911, and they closed this house down and went to Chicago to get further education. Their mother went with them to do this.
That's just incredible. I'm thinking of what power, Ruby. Ruby's pointing at the clock. I know, Ruby, we're running out of time here on this segment, and I'm going to be right with you. But the note of that is really power when you decide you want your kids to have a college training, but there's no college in town. And rather than to send your kids away where you won't see them, what do?
You bring the college here.
Yeah, you bring the college here. Ruby and Nancy, we're going to be back in one moment for our final segment. And you have just been splendid guests to have, and I've sure learned a great deal. And we're going to talk more about Gladys Pyle, the lady, when we get back. We'll be back in one moment. You're listening to Personalities with Chuck Anderson. We're back. This is Chuck Anderson. We're sitting in the dining room of the Gladys Pyle House Museum. And with me are two lovely ladies, very knowledgeable about her life. We have the director of the House Museum, Nancy Holtzclaw. And we have the director of the Dakota Land Museum, Ruby Johansson. And ladies, thank you for your time again. Let's start talking more about Gladys Pyle. Now, she was a lovely lady. After college, what did Gladys do?
Well, she taught and was also a principal at one school. She didn't teach too long, about 6 years. And she helped her brother. There was only the one boy in the family. And she helped him and his wife when the wife was very ill. She helped take care of them.
Oh, this is when she spent the year at the shanty? Nancy, you had an awfully good comment about that. Do you remember she was out there for about a year and helping her family? And you mentioned something, you called it a transition to politics, and I found that fascinating. Why do you think that year out north of Belle Fourche, taking care of a family who needed help, Now, I know that we're holding our hands up in the air, and no one but Gladys really knows, but you're entitled to an opinion. And I imagine being in this about 12 by 14-foot shanty, Gladys Pyle had a great deal of time to think and to reflect upon her life and maybe where she was going. And just give a guess. What do you think? This was her real transition period. This is when she became the politician, when she left that shanty out there. Why do you think, Nancy?
Well, of course, she has had a background. Her parents were both very much in politics. Her father was the lawyer and attorney general for South Dakota, and her mother was in the suffrage movement and active in things. And And I think a lot of it's her upbringing. Her brother was a lawyer also.
Very, very vocal family.
Yes, and she was out there with him in the claim shanty. And I'm sure that the background had a lot to do with this.
And Ruby, we don't want to put you on the spot, but I would respect your opinion because there's going to be more experts than probably, you know, some guy like me. What changed her life? She's a teacher, she's a principal, she's playing by the rules as a woman was supposed to do back in those days. She goes out to this claim shanty to help her family and emerges now as something a woman isn't supposed to do, and does she become really big into politics?
Well, chances are she probably read some of the books that her brother had because he was an attorney, and she probably maybe met some of the politicians out in that area. And hey, if they can do this, I can too.
What a wonderful lady. And I'm so glad to have the chance to say that I met her, that I interviewed her, and she was, like I said, she was spunky at 95. She held everybody up really good there at the Huron Public Library for that book signing party. We keep talking about the suffrage movement, and I think that this must have been a great deal of influence upon Gladys Pyle's life. Her mother, I'm looking at a certificate right up here. Nancy, tell us about the certificate.
She became American Mother of the Year of South Dakota in 1947, and she was very active in the suffrage movement and helped get women the right to vote. And this was 2 years before the nation.
Well, let's go over that again. What was that again now, Nancy?
Women in South Dakota were given or got the right to vote 2 years before the nation got that right to vote.
Because Gladys Pyle's mother?
Yes.
Being in the suffrage movement, she put the squeeze on.
Oh, yes, she really wanted that to go through and was very active in it and was very happy when it happened.
Now, not only is her mother, Gladys Pyle's mother, in the suffrage movement, her father is in the temperance movement. Is that right?
Yes.
Wow, what a background. Your father in the temperance. Now, I'm wondering, I had mentioned this earlier before the show, and we hadn't quite arrived at a decision. But, you know, a lot of the ladies who had gone into the temperance movement and, you know, busting the whiskey bottles, bars all the way across the nation, when they weren't stopped, physically thrown in jail, they then found kind of a new power that they didn't realize that they had. They could do something and not being thrown in jail. And I believe this is where the suffrage movement then began, is where they felt, hey, maybe we can vote and not be thrown in jail. What do you think, Ruby?
Well, sounds good to me, because I'm sure glad they did something.
Or you would still be home barefoot and what?
I don't think we really appreciate what a short time ago we couldn't vote. Now, that's not that many years ago.
That's right.
And if it hadn't been for Gladys and her mother and some of these other ladies that really got in there and dug, we still wouldn't be voting.
Do you think that we've given Gladys Pyle and her mother and her father, do you think that we've really given those ladies the credit that they really deserve?
No, I don't think so. I think a lot of people already take it for granted and don't realize somebody had to do this thing the first time and really push for it.
So she spends a year sort of reflecting out there in that shanty, helping her family that was sick, emerges now, and what does she do? This is a new Gladys Pyle. What does she do?
Well, she got right in there and started digging and trying to get into things that she probably didn't have any business in, but she was going to do it anyway.
And Nancy, going along the way, what were some of the things that she did?
What didn't she do?
That's right.
She was quite active. She was in all these things that I told you about earlier, and in the House of Representatives, and Secretary of State, and in the Securities Commission. Of course, the first Senator of the United States, Senator of the United States. That's quite something.
Now I've got a question, and I guess we haven't quite resolved this. After she was in the Senate, I understand, she really didn't have any retirement benefits like the senators do have now.
No, no.
And the years of teaching, they didn't have a retirement program way back then like they do now, do they, Ruby?
No, no, well, they didn't have.
How did she make it then?
She sold life insurance after she was through with politics. She sold life insurance. Then also here in her house, she rented out rooms upstairs. It's only
That's
a block
right.
from the hospital, and she had a lot of people come that would come over just even for the night.
Well, it wouldn't have been a party house over here. You wouldn't have a party. You wouldn't get a room here, would you?
But some of the rooms upstairs were made into apartments, and there were ladies that lived here for a good many years.
Well, that was really quite creative on her part then, as a woman who realizes that she's got to have something. Now, when she died, she wasn't a wealthy woman, was she, Nancy?
No, she wasn't. And to look at this house the way it is, you'd think they had a lot of money. I've had a lot of people come in here and say it just looked like they were very wealthy, but she just didn't have any money.
Well, the house was a one owner, and actually,
right.
and then her parents were people of substance, though.
And the house was paid off. The mortgage was paid off before the father died, and of course that helped too.
Maybe these are some of the things that we really haven't thought about, Gladys Powell. We have a lady that had just no benefits, and they did. Someone said now they had owned a farm. Was this now back when Dad was still around?
Yes, he had a farm, and that was paid for, and the house was paid for. So they had that to fall back on when he died, and he was only 43, and the children were 13, 14, 15, and 16. So she had a long time there to finish raising those children, and they all went through college.
Did they keep the farm?
They kept it until quite late. I think it was in the 40s that they finally sold the farm. So they did pretty well using that. And that was back in the days when the ladies didn't go to work like they do now. When you were left with four
right.
kids to raise, you just got a job. And then you just didn't do that.
So she rents the rooms out upstairs, and they have five bedrooms, so I suppose that was quite helpful. And that was very creative on her part, wasn't it?
Well, this was Gladys did this,
mm-hmm.
not her mother. Her mother had the children to raise, and that they didn't
That's
do
right.
those things then. And I really don't know how they kept going. Mainly the farm, I guess.
Ruby, you said your daughter had Gladys as a lecturer. Let's tell that story.
When my daughter went in the Honor Society, and they had a little program, and Gladys Pyle was the speaker. And she thought, what's this old lady got to tell us young kids? And when Gladys got up there and started talking with just a few little notes and just started talking, she said that was one of the speeches she remembered the longest of any of the ones that she'd heard in her high school days.
You've got a wonderful story. I'm afraid I will miss the story, so let's say it right now, Nancy. There's a shaving mug here in the house behind glass, and we just can't imagine what it must have been like to be a woman in a totally male-dominated United right. States Senate. How did she get the shaving mug?
Well, the Senate barbershop sheepishly asked her one day if she would like the shaving mug all the men before her had gotten. And she said, I want everything the men have gotten. And by the time she got done with her term, her shaving mug with her name on it arrived here. We have it in the case over here to see.
It looks in mint condition. It doesn't look like
yes.
they ever use it.
She said, I don't even know anybody that shaves that way anymore, but it's just kind of the principle of the thing.
Well, this has been a wonderful hour for me, Ruby, and I'm so glad I had a chance to know Gladys, and I'm kind of starting to feel like she's around the house here now. And, of course, you people working around the house, you must get this feeling through osmosis. Give me, in just your own feeling, Ruby, your thoughts about Gladys and the stories that you've heard. Kind of put it together. We've only got about a minute to go.
I've heard many, many stories of people that knew her really well. And I didn't know her well, but she just was the type of person that she had such a personality that you never forgot her. once you saw her and visited with her, even a few minutes, you remembered her. And of course, she was known as kind of a character. She walked down the street in the middle of the street.
Oh, did she?
Oh, yes. And everybody knew here was Gladys, and she walked, whether it was summertime, wintertime, whatever. She was always walking around town.
Would she go down the main drag?
Oh, yes.
In the middle of the street?
Sure. Well, probably not right on Dakota, but down 4th Street. She'd just walk wherever she wanted to.
Whoa.
Get out of her way.
I wouldn't have been a guy way back in those years and taken her on in a political anything. I bet you she was tough.
She knew what she was doing. She was very well read, and she used her dictionary all the time, almost every day. She never ran out of something to say.
It's our thanks to these two ladies who are keeping the memories of Gladys Pyle alive in the Pyle House Museum. So we want to thank very much the director of the Pyle House Museum, Nancy Holtzclaw, and we want to thank very much Ruby Johansson for being with us today. I think I've learned a great deal, and I've never been in this home. And Ruby and Nancy, do you want to mention, just before we close, that it is open to the public? There's a contribution for $1 as you walk in, and that's just to try to help out, right? But if you want to invite them, this is your chance.
Yes, it's open every day from 1 to 4, and if you're looking for something interesting to see, just come on over.
And is that 12 months a year, Nancy?
Yes, and we're now decorating for Christmas, so the Christmas decorations will be up here pretty soon, so come see the Christmas.
That's the hours of 1 to 4.
Every day of the week. Every day of the week.
And there is a person here who is security, takes care of the place, lives upstairs, and they're here.
Mm-hmm. Gloria French, our caretaker, lives upstairs, and she keeps the yard looking beautiful during the summertime, and of course keeps it going in the wintertime.
She's a very busy gal.
Yes.
This is Chuck Anderson. We've been at the Gladys Pyle House Museum, located in Eastern Huron, and it's been my privilege, ladies, to be with you. I want to thank you very much for being on the show, and maybe somewhere down the line we can talk about Gladys Pyle again. She is definitely a woman that we want to remember here in South Dakota. Until next week, this is Chuck Anderson saying to everyone, go out and have a really wonderful and great week, and thanks for listening.